This podcast brought to you by the English Department at Florida State University.
For one lucky summer, I studied with Mark Bibbins at Port Townsend Writers Conference. It was 2014, a time of seriousness, but also of levity. Russia hosted a creepy, repressive version of the Olympics. Courtney Love found the missing Malaysian jet by reviewing satellite imagery of the Pacific Ocean. Florida man stabbed his nephew for eating too many pork chops at dinner. In Mark Bibbins' workshop, we read Jennifer L. Knox's hot-ass poem and the best Thanksgiving ever, Gertrude Stein's patriarchal poetry, James Schuyler, Eileen Miles, Mina Loy, and Patricia Lockwood. We read Frank O'Hara's Personism. We read a section of Lynn Hagenian's My Life. Mark gave us excerpts of A.R. Ammon's poem written on a roll of adding machine tape, and Joe Wenderoth's Letters to Wendy's series written on the restaurant's comment cards. He suggested we write a poem on a physical object. Mark said, write a poem like James Tate's How the Pope is Chosen and substitute Pope with anything else. Mark photocopied a stack of oddly poetical memos Diana Vreeland wrote to her staff at Vogue in the 60s and suggested we write a poem either in the form of a memo or in the voice of Mrs. Vreeland. I'm not sure what others in the class made of these exercises, but I found myself thinking, aren't those kids up at the new school in Columbia lucky little jerks? It's rare to be able to remember what a poet read to you more than a year ago, but I know that summer in Port Townsend, Mark Bibbins read A Small Gesture of Gratitude from his newest book, They Don't Kill You Because They're Hungry, They Kill You Because They're Full, because it is a poem in which every line is perfect. A poem constructed of problems to be written out of, and Mark does this flawlessly, or rather by dwelling in flaw, in media reportage, celebrity culture, our political system, and ultimately, I think, the way we use language and what we expect of it. And he does it with turns of phrase, by building sentences designed to slay their readers with ingenuity and wit. I want to build better sentences when I read Mark Bibbins, and I am not alone. As readers, we recognize the poet whose voice has been honed to the point of exactitude, where every phrase is apt and could be written by no other. I often associate this quality with a fixed speaker. Yet the speaker in many of the poems in They Don't Kill You is mutable, a kind of everyday observer gifted to us from the void, whose agenda is at first unclear. Consider, too, that by and large, these poems function by imagistic or language associations rather than on story. It's like Bibbins has accomplished a voice-driven poetics that sidesteps the pitfalls of a poetry that depends too much on who is writing it and the single thing they are trying to tell us, poor readers. This is hard to pull off. Here is what Adam Day had to say about it in the Iowa Review. The poems and the eye resist solipsism in preference for creating an interiority and commentary largely derived from the world at large and from confronting the administered world as represented by the market, the church, ideology, civil and municipal bodies, etc., which is another way of saying that these poems possess a real sense of urgency, of something at stake. Several poems in They Don't Kill You are quite explicit in addressing so-called political subject matter. I'm thinking of I Can't Explain, Honky, the Pat Robertson poems, historical action figures, some of the Poem That Wants series, and the final poem in the book, A Small Gesture of Gratitude, that I already mentioned. In these poems and in others that pose more existential questions about sense-making, Bibbins implores us to resist the various propagandas of our age and what we are told to feel and to expect. Then you get lines like these in the poem, in which the poetic fallacy wants to even more. I wish I had some idea, but to admit I have any at all is to risk that it is full of a sad nothing. You will have this sense often when reading Mark Bibbins, that you first have to care deeply about meaning to be concerned about its loss. They Don't Kill You Because They're Hungry, They Kill You Because They're Full was published by Copper Canyon Press and named one of the best books of 2014 by Publishers Weekly. Mark Bibbins' previous books are The Dance of No Hard Feelings and Sky Lounge, which won the Lambda Award. He teaches graduate creative writing at the New School, where he co-founded Lit Magazine, and at Columbia University. He also edits the poetry section of The All. Mark is the reason I recoil from using the word just in my poems. But more than that, he has helped me write poems that are complex rather than merely complicated. I hope your socks are attached to your feet, Tallahassee, because you are the lucky ones tonight. I'm pleased to welcome Mark Bibbins.
Aaron, that's amazing. And I don't read reviews of my work, so you snuck some of that guy's review in there, so that's nice. So I guess to try to ingratiate myself to you a little bit, I'll tell you that you mentioned that my first book won a Lambda Literary Award. And Lambda sounds a lot like another organization with which I hope you're not too familiar, some of you, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. So a civilian friend of mine, when the book won that prize, said, "Oh, are you gonna tell people that?"
So
that's my funny thing. All dreary from here on out. So I'm gonna read, I guess, a bunch of poems from They Don't Kill You Because They're Hungry, They Kill You Because They're Full, and some newer ones. And then some special things in between. Okay, so the first one is called Grand Reopening. Eventually, I was granted my childhood wish for invisibility, but it's turned out not to be sexually useful in the way I intended. The first legitimately weird idea I had in middle age, I tamed and named Tom York after a pony who clomped among the precincts of my visible youth, refusing to be rode, my use of the word first proving to have been based on an unfounded sense of possibility that ill defines my generation still. Hidden message. We cannot measure the corruption of our age, but we can make the heat of it ever hotter by leaping onto the pyre. On hearing the kvetching of coyotes in a California night, my doppelganger, well, he panics, and he becomes a constellation that needs to hide behind a mountain with a lake nestled in it that reveals how when light and death want you, you won't evade them. I gave names to a dozen other ideas and deleted those names, because what did having them ever do? Impossibly sweet and recalcitrant old Tom York, though, best pony anybody knew. So I think there's a lot of competition for this, but I think maybe the eight worst words you can hear at a poetry reading are, let's see, what do you need to know? So I'll just tell you that this poem mentions Candy Darling, who was a drag queen and a Warhol superstar who died at the age of 29, I like to think with her wig on. This is called Ruin. Oh, this is not a stable surface. That's okay, that's good to know early on. That's cool. Okay, Ruin. Here in the Spectral Academy, here in the home of the freaks, I've devoted myself to something Candy Darling told her diary. I will not cease to be myself for foolish people. But what if foolish people's who I am? The new windows in the city are not the same color as money after all. It's more like privacy, sweating a sort of crystal algae sheen. Candy's ghost collects herself behind one of these windows, I know it, running her lines, her voice a raft of white flowers floating in a sink. Each day we are invited to try suicide by zoo animals, or by eating a handful of poisoned frogs, thus triggering a laugh track over footage of a rainforest being razed. Ruin feasts on us, pausing mid-munch to baste us with our juices. As a stopgap against never praising ruin enough, we might praise the alien, we might praise blood, we might praise the blood of the alien as it sizzles through the floor, sat safe in our seats in the theater of money. We must believe, as the child in its dark room believes it cannot be seen, that nothing could touch us here. To make you feel more like you're on the internet, every now and then I'm going to read tweets by different people on Twitter between poems. This one is by Karate Horse. Imagine being in Jeff Throat's Hall and the other guys say, "We aren't going to do flute in this one," and you just have to sit there with your stupid flute. The The second worst thing about the worst opening band on Earth is that one can also see them. I'll make a cloak out of smoke as it issues from burning speakers, drape it over the mud of which my body is made. The house style could best be described as leaves that cling to trees too long into winter. I understand how it is to miss a hint, as now and then I get to watch the anger harbored against my people inflate like soap bubbles in something resembling real time. A truce is thrilling for as long as it lasts and the extent to which it's meant. I set foot in a forest once, so I know how things on Earth can work. There were, I believe, some leafcutter ants, and I climbed a pyramid and may have heard a monkey. Beautiful soldiers stopped us on the way back to the shore along which we were living. The soldiers looked like children to me then. To whom must they look like children now? This is, did you mention Eileen Miles, Aaron? Yeah, she's awesome. You should read her. She, without volunteering to, has made an appearance in this next poem. This is called A Ripple Through the Electorate. Attention, next generation. Your new porn name is the first kind of yogurt you tasted, plus the last name of your senior senator. Pineapple Feinstein. Plain McCain. What do I have to say about America that anyone isn't already texting to a porn star right now? All the senators come back from whatever they do and retire to a money-lined chamber. Have a seat on my belly, the pinkest one says, his mouth a wallet open to the meat lobby. I want democracy to make me feel at least half-mast, but so far, not even a tingle, no significant glow. Not sure if we're in fog or clouds, but I do know I don't feel anything but meat. The pink one fits an empire in a photograph that fits in a frame on his desk, and everyone goes out to get We're All in Pink tattoos. So, dreams, yes, forbidden, but my last had Eileen Miles in it, one or both of us wearing plaid socks to repel car accidents, which seemed like a horse barn door situation from the couch we were sitting on, watching footage of car crashes. If I say out loud how much I wanted to have sex with a high school friend who died in a car crash, is that risk? To me, it feels like it, which probably proves it isn't. I mean, what am I, not out? To me, it feels risky to pay full price for a shirt because every time I do, a button falls off within a week. I never know if it's bad form to let someone know they showed up in a dream. It seems like an honesty one could too easily become known for. Another kind of pressure I don't need. But look at our senators, toughing it out, unsentimental as a strip mine. Senators, thanks for inviting me to the meeting, and since you asked, I reject how you claim things work in the real world, because fuck your real world. I saw a thing on the internet where a guy made, I guess it was a Vine, seemed to be about that long, a guy made a Donald Trump thing out of a croissant and a whoopee cushion. It was perfect. Here's another one. This is a tweet by Patricia Lockwood. I'm the worst supervillain of all. I got bitten by a book and now I'm so boring. Okay, so this is called I Can Explain. We were upset after the demons crashed our airplanes into us. We started hearing a lot about how they do things in Afghanistan because that was one of the places we were supposed to want to kill because they had killed us. And one of the things they have there is like a version of polo with a headless goat instead of a ball. Polo is what? Riding around on horses and using long mallets to knock an object into a goal on a playing field. And you said, oh, how awful, savage people, poor goat. Dragging a headless goat carcass around. And of course, here we like football, pigskin. And you said, oh, how awful, savage people, poor pig. Okay, I'm going to read this one for my young friend, CD. And the title comes from the second season of The Jersey Shore. There was a little fire in the kitchen, and so they had to call the fire department. And JWoww, not very convincingly, she didn't seem to have the kind of urgency that fire brings out in most of us, said, "Evacuate the premise." I said, "Thank you, JWoww, for the title of my new poem." Civilization on a string sounds more sinister than the world. Stuttering is kiss cousin to an incantation, one we shouted when we came to the creek and found it full of math, but not so good for drinking. Esteemed accomplice, much lacked beloved, dearest choice I didn't know I made, favorite first and finally most vulnerable spot, the trees release their latent fire at us. In photos of lightning, see, it eats upward. Up.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank JWoww. Okay. This is pedagogy and performance. Whatever the lesson was, it wasn't taking. We awaited the information in kind of a corporate way, and I kept wanting to go up to the whiteboard and write feminine, marvelous, and tough, and ask, is that what you're trying to do? Sometimes it's hard to figure out how to move. When cardinals move, they're as imposing as cows. They pull pornography from abstraction. But let's also look at us a few weeks ago, a scale model of Seattle with its gleaming library protruding like a jewel from a navel. This was our best self, not the contraption of drawers and cranks that made our work, not the surprisingly delicate bones of Boba Fett painted the same colors as his armor, not the three toe-headed delinquents who used the contraption in their performance, then went home after disparaging the audience and showered together, not the cast of my life filing into a wooden amphitheater as my favorite band started soundcheck in another country. How would I get there on time, even with half my friends rooting for me? How do I get anything done when, as late as last night, someone started yelling "Cardinal" at the sight of blood soaking my sleeve? Okay, more Andy Warhol, I guess, for a second. This is called "In the Corner of a Room Where You Would Never Look." Warhol was right. He said athletes are fat in the right places and they're young in the right places. Apparently, the next Godzilla movie has Godzilla just running around eating everyone's money, and it's the scariest thing ever. We can rub bug powder on the national anthem and run that over the closing credits, as long as the singer manages to sing, "I'm in love with everyone but you," almost convincingly. A production team undoing one another's pants is how we get naked now, but tomorrow morning, all the cut-off parts of us are coming back, so get ready. Europe, you swear it exists because you once had sex in it. And ideas. Prepositions, that's where we all get sucked under. Prepositions, the San Andreas fault of meaning. Prepositions, what came dislodged when our parents hired operatives to kidnap us from cults and deprogram us in the backs of vans. Warhol was talking about the ass, right? Which we've come to understand is the vessel of histories, or that effect. We put everything through a translation engine because we wanted to see the world. This is called Factory. He can say it was a painting. He can say we were the painting, or that the painting wasn't painting and we only happened to ourselves. We can say we kept things running by creating distractions from the hideous truth of how things run, that we were broken, that we lingered near a broken factory, that we had broken. We can say that the disappointment of slicing into a leek and not finding the requisite layers but a thick, white, inedible core is not the disappointment of approaching a sleeping animal only to learn that it is dead, but it does nudge one slightly further into despair. We said despair. We meant the strings of impossible whose river had presented us a city that was broken, that we had been. Sweet, isn't it? This one is from Hard, Never Give Up. No regrets, no excuses, progress, gender. This is called The Editors. We started experiments to benign content, some of which had to do with beauty, some of which had to do with who could twist beauty's ritual. You've made a more useful game, but to whom? You would call the fragment, who dislikes evidence, and how beautiful? What if order? monochrome and no clue, his radical idea and hers. Still no content, and it drove some of us to despair, others to rhythm. Okay. X and, you know, little pieces of rock, and they're quite extraordinary, and that, you know, I saw it on that. Okay. E.T. comes through the light fixture on a holiday when nobody can come plug it up and make us regret. These four white doors on the sidewalk, which I dragged home two and one at a time. I build and hop around, waiting for the right one to wander in. The right a tweet by Danny Hot Tubs. It's sort of a little dialogue. They get in trouble for it, but people just sort of like steal each other's tweets, which sounds like I'm talking about something else, but I'm not. Filling up your mouth. Figure out something edible, a seed at the source, but nothing more useful than usual perversions. A man stepped off the train holding here, but I'm less crucial than the light that shoots through every window I walk by and floods me. If not, I don't know. Oh, that one, I got a million of them. Okay, no doubt 10 times smarter than all us smart-ass bitchy barmaids put together. Maybe so. Happy B-Day CP and happy D-Day AG. Inevitably, we would get loaded. Must not see what fucking is other than stinky. If I had anything to say about gender, I'd already. When I turn into a boy, I will wag a pecker at you like a dirty mop until it cracks and flops. Hold. Leave the lizard alone.